Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The U.S. warns Russia is planning a fake pretext for an invasion of Ukraine. Plus, Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping meet in Beijing as many Western leaders boycott the Winter Games.
Putin's message is one of defiance. He's sending the message that he's not afraid of sanction threats from the West because China can step up potentially to support Russia economically.
And as oil prices soar, why aren't frackers rising to the occasion? It's Friday, February 4th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Russia is planning to fabricate a pretext for an invasion of Ukraine by releasing a staged video depicting attacks by Kiev military forces. That's according to U.S. officials citing newly declassified intelligence. State Department spokesman Ned Price described the video, saying the U.S. wanted to expose Russian tactics in an attempt to avert a conflict in Ukraine.
A video with graphic scenes of false explosions, depicting corpses, crisis actors pretending to be mourners, and images of destroyed locations or military equipment, entirely fabricated by Russian intelligence. Russia has signaled it's willing to continue diplomatic talks as a means to de-escalate, but actions such as these suggest otherwise.
Russian officials didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. The Kremlin has denied any plans to invade or undermine Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin and Chinese leader Xi Jinping met today in Beijing against the backdrop of the Olympic opening ceremony. Putin kicked off the meeting by offering to supply China with 10 billion cubic meters of natural gas per year. Journal China reporter Chow Deng says that Putin stands to benefit from the meeting in several ways.
It's especially important for Putin because Russia has few friends, and having China show support for its security concerns is very much a way for Moscow to push back against the U.S. If China can pledge to provide Russia real economic support in the form of energy purchases or commitments, say to diversify currency transactions away from the U.S. dollar, that would all go a long way to helping Russia fight sanctions from the U.S., which would be inevitably imposed should Putin choose to invade Ukraine.
Putin is the most prominent leader to attend the Winter Olympics, which have been the subject of a diplomatic boycott by the likes of the U.S., U.K., Australia, and Japan. U.S. automaker Ford has posted strong quarterly earnings and issued an upbeat forecast for the year, in a sign that pandemic-related disruptions could soon be behind it. Ford's nearly $18 billion in full-year net income was driven by gains from its investment in electric vehicle startup Rivian Automotive. It echoes earnings from General Motors earlier this week, which included a major pivot to EVs and forecast a sharp rebound in factory activity. And your next Amazon Prime delivery is about to cost more in the long run. Amazon has announced it will soon raise the price of Prime subscriptions from $119 to $139 a year. That higher cost will apply to new users starting February 18th and existing customers after March 25th. The company said the rising cost of wages, transportation, and the continued expansion of membership benefits are the reason for the price increase. You can hear more about Amazon and the labor movement they're facing later in the show. This week, WTI oil futures topped $90 for the first time since 2014 as energy demand continues to surge. And with analysts predicting that prices could keep on climbing, you'd think that America's oil frackers would be springing to action, ramping up production and reaping in profits. But it's not that simple. And here with a look at why is finance reporter Julie Steinberg. Hi, Julie.
Good morning.
Okay, oil prices have been rising for 7 straight weeks now. What is driving that?
A couple of different factors are at play here. What we're seeing in the market is that traders think that the worst of COVID-19 will soon be over. the wave of infection caused by Omicron hasn't reduced demand as much as traders thought it might when the variant was identified in late November. So we're seeing some of that exuberance and relief really reflected in the oil market. And the prices are also a reflection of concerns among traders over instability in Eastern Europe and the Middle East, which could ultimately end up denting supplies.
Sure. How are frackers responding to these dynamics?
So you might be surprised. You would think that they'd be ramping up production, but actually the opposite is happening and they're easing back because they're concerned about exhausting well inventory. So they're currently running in place and holding off from drilling. And many drillers say they're never going to return to the production growth levels that we saw before the pandemic of up to 30% a year. That's due in part to rising costs for raw materials and labor, a lack of available financing. And basically what it boils down to is the enormous number of new wells that you would require to continue up that pace.
I mean, geez, that sounds like it could be a wake-up call for this industry and for the states, frankly, that we're counting on fracking over the next few years and decades. Is it possible the longevity of fracking oil reserves were overstated?
So there was definitely some optimism. And what we saw happen during the pandemic when we had lower oil prices is that frackers made a big dent in their inventory as they tried to harvest those sweet spots to survive. And in recent years, they've discovered that their projections for how many wells they could actually put into these spaces were overly optimistic. So since the end of 2016, the number of remaining top-tier drilling locations across the five major U.S. oil regions has been cut from more than 68,000 to less than 35,000.
Yeah, and assuming shale producers likely won't be the players to profit off of this current oil boom, who is going to be?
And this is where you see some of the concerns of the geopolitical factors come to play here. There are concerns that market power is shifting back to other producers, many overseas. The Energy Information Administration says OPEC members still have more surplus production capacity. So definitely concerns that some of that market power is flowing away from the U.S.
That was finance reporter Julie Steinberg. Thanks, Julie.
Thanks so much.
Coming up, Amazon workers in Bessemer, Alabama are heading back to the ballot box to decide whether or not to unionize. We'll take a look at how the union landscape has changed since last year's unsuccessful vote at that same warehouse after the break.
NetSuite by Oracle brings accounting, finance, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce costs everywhere. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/wallstreet.
Over the past year, we've been reporting on a growing push toward unionization across the U.S., with major conglomerates like Starbucks and Amazon facing calls for better labor rights. However, not everyone heeded that, with 71% of workers at an Amazon warehouse in Alabama last year voting not to unionize. But that victory for Amazon may prove to be short-lived, because starting today, workers at that same facility are voting again. For more on this story, we're joined by Journal reporter Sebastian Herrera. Hey, Sebastian.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You've been covering unionization efforts at Amazon pretty closely. And that result last year at the facility in Alabama just wasn't close. So why are workers there voting again?
Yeah, it wasn't close at all, but it's being held again because during that voting period last year, Amazon had the USPS install a mailbox in front of this warehouse, and they set up a tent around it and even signs around it. And what this caused in the view of the NLRB is that workers could have thought that Amazon might have been controlling the election in some way. Maybe it was counting the ballots. And even though Amazon wasn't found to access any of the ballots themselves, it created this sort of atmosphere where workers might have thought that Amazon was playing some sort of role in counting ballots or in the result of the election. And that was reason enough for the NLRB to say, we just need to have this election again.
And besides that mailbox issue, are there other reasons why the union lost last year's vote?
One of the reasons it's really hard to organize and unionize at Amazon specifically is that the company has huge turnover rate. So a lot of the voters that might be eligible right now, they might not even be around by the time the election concludes. And we saw that happen last time. The union estimated that during the course of voting period last time, 1,000 workers left in this 6,000 person facility. And there's only half of workers now eligible that were here for the last election. So turnover is a huge hurdle for the unions to particularly take on Amazon. And that's certainly if you are trying to consistently reach new people, new voters, and trying to convince them, then it just becomes a humongous task to accomplish.
Yeah, and yet organizers are kicking off another vote today. Do they think they stand a better chance of winning this time around?
It's going to be really tough for organizers. Labor researchers will even tell you that the second time around, it's even tougher to get momentum. But something that organizers have brought up is the difference between this year and last year is there are more vaccinated people. Majority of the country is vaccinated. And so there's a safer environment for them to go door knocking, to run a typical campaign, to meet with people more in person. And that does give them sort of an edge in just being able to more easily communicate with workers. Because last year, they did rely a lot on phone calls and sending flyers and more at distance sort of campaigning. So this time around, they bring up that as a big strategic difference. They say, we're now just able to run like a normal campaign.
I imagine Amazon throughout all of this hasn't just been sitting idly by. What steps have they taken to try and address worker concerns and ensure they don't lose this vote?
Yeah, so Amazon came out afterwards and said, you know what, even though we've won, we've recognized there needs to be some changes with our workforce. Mainly what we've seen is they've improved some safety standards at their warehouses in terms of just the safety education that they give to their warehouse workers. They've raised wages across the country. They average now over $18 an hour. They've given out large bonuses as well. And they also signed this deal with the NLRB recently that basically essentially said, we're gonna let our workers across our facilities, both in written and email and other communications, know that they do have the right to organize. And just even doing that, that is a big deal.
Yeah, pulling politics into the conversation for a minute, President Biden has said his administration's policy is to support unions. And thanks to two appointments that he's made to the NLRB's board, it now has a Democratic majority. What, if any, impact has that had?
Yeah, it's interesting because the government's board of the NLRB was changing as this was happening. But if you talk to labor experts, they do say there is a little bit of a difference when there's a different administration in the sense that, for example, the NLRB general counsel is now a Biden appointee and sort of where different regional directors get their sort of direction and advice from is that general counsel. At the same time, at the end of the day, NLRB officials are expected to just uphold the law as it is. And the law does state pretty clearly if there's any atmosphere around an election that causes any sort of doubt on the results, that basically to take the steps to have the vote happen again.
Got it. You also spoke to some labor researchers who suggested this could be a relatively fruitful period for union organizing across the U.S. Why is that?
Well, I think we're in a really interesting time with the American workforce because there's a huge labor shortage going on and it has been going on for quite some time now. And so what you have is workers having more bargaining power maybe than ever in recent memory. And so what that creates is sort of this momentum to be able to challenge employers more and be able to bargain with them more and just more momentum towards strikes and any sort of actions towards employers. And so there is this sort of conditions where workers just feel more fired up about this and unions are taking their moment to create actions that might create change.
And is that translating into other union pushes at notable companies?
Yeah, I mean, you do see it at Starbucks. They've started to unionize some stores. I do think it's important to note that even as we're seeing these actions at Amazon, at Starbucks, during the past year, unions overall in America once again lost membership. And this has been happening for some decades, that the trend of unions losing more and more membership. And so while there is some momentum in some sense with elections like Bessemer, it's still a tough period for unions in terms of membership and sort of their future and how they're going to thrive and survive.
That was Journal reporter Sebastian Herrera. Sebastian, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you.
And And finally, we've all been there, fielding tech requests from family members struggling with one of their many devices. And while serving as the family IT person isn't glamorous, there is a lot you can do proactively to give your loved ones a tech tune-up, from setting up password managers to deleting smartphone app data if you're just tired of hearing, "There's no space on my phone." WSJ personal tech reporter Nicole Nguyen has some more tips.
Sit them down and set up some features that will help them use their tech all year long. Some of these things include adding a digital shortcut to their vaccine card so that they can easily access it from their iPhone or Android wallet so that they don't have to rifle through their photo library. Another is turning on device location tracking because people lose their devices all the time. And another is adding an emergency contact, which I think is pretty important just in case of emergencies.
Mom and Dad, don't worry. I haven't turned on location tracking on your phones yet, or have I? And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.